Okay. Hey, how you doing today, Reynard?
I'm all good and dandy.
You can call me Diana Lesky if you wish. So,
We might try that. Let's try that.
I was just wondering, which do you prefer, abductee or experiencer?
Oh, I think I've just had an experience myself.
My preference is for neither.
Hi, this is Larry Musser. I was bleeping Detective Manners in Jose Chung from Outer Space, and you're listening to the most fantastic XCast podcast.
Welcome back to the XCast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Paige Schechter, and today's show will be on one of the quintessential episodes of The X-Files, Darren Morgan's crowning achievement of the original run, Season 3, Episode 20's Jose Chung's From Outer Space. I'm joined by the ever-exciting Kurt North, known aptly around the Twitterverse as Reynard Muldrake. Hi, Kurt, how are you?
Hello, Paige. I'm doing fine. How's yourself?
I'm fine, thank you. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of this one, I'm going to ask you our patented five questions.
I've been waiting all my life for this. Brilliant.
So, when did you first discover the X-Files?
Well, my first recollection of seeing any X-File was on the BBC early doors in season one, and it was when Scully was tied to the radiator in Lazarus. And I remember that vividly, and I was the rest of it's a bit hazy about what I saw after that. But about 18 months after, I probably saw most of season two, towards the end of season two. And then it moved to Sky over in the UK here, and the unopened file, which is the VHS for the Paperclip trilogy, came out on VHS here. And that's when I started really getting into it. So moving into season three, and then I caught up with most of season one through VHS tapes. And then once it had the rerun and bought the actual VHS box set, I kind of caught up with there. So end of season two, beginning of season three was really kind of where I started watching it from.
I love how your first memory is of Scully tied to a radiator.
Well, it's just one of those things, you know. It's obviously been burnt into my mind, that image.
So. I think so. So, what is your favorite episode?
Moving on. This one. Jose Chung's From Outer Space.
Yes. And what is your favorite season?
I would have to say this season, actually, season three. I think it's got the strongest run of the mythology. And mythology is where my heart is. Darren Morgan stuff, you know, there's only a handful of episodes, which all of them I do love. But obviously, you know, the run of the mill has to be the mythology for me. And what I like about season three, especially, is the thematic link and the link between the stories over the course of the season. So you've got things like Paperclip and the Nazis, and moving into Nicene 731 with the Japanese, and then the Talipus coming into play in Piper Maroon Apocrypha. So I really do like that kind of through line of story through season three. And then it kind of moves into a new phase when you get to Talitha Kumi. It's also got Clyde Bruckman and Jose Chung. So without those two, you know, you've got two Darren Morgan episodes in a season as well, which is fantastic. And you've got even got like the development of Millennium starting to come through in Grotesque, and that's really something that Millennium is a really important show to me. I think it's a fantastic spin-off from the X-Files, and I really do love Millennium. So it's kind of season three for those really reasons really.
Great. And who is your favourite character?
I've been thinking long and hard about this for a while now. My mind's telling me to say Scully. I think Scully is probably the most rounded, and I know a lot of people have put down Dana Scully, but I do have to say Mulder, just purely because he was my kind of hero growing up as a kid. You know, I've developed a lot of mannerisms, a lot of my humor comes from the way that he acts as well, and I think he's actually shaped some of my personality traits as well. So I would have to say Fox Mulder.
Excellent. And what is your favorite moment from the series?
It's really hard to say. I mean, there's so many, but I would have to, and I think this is a great thing for this to happen, but I would have to say, especially at this moment in time, the end of the forehead sweat. I just think that just says everything about the X-Files over its history, and how we all remember the show growing up, and I think it's just a fantastic sort of throw a goodbye from Darren Morgan as well. I think it's really good. I was umming and ahhing whether or not to include the end scene of I Want to Believe as well, but I've gone with the end of Forehead Sweat.
Yes, and that segs very well into our topic for today. Jose Chung's From Outer Space. It's not only my favorite episode of The X-Files, but my favorite episode of television ever. Unless I'm watching or have just watched the sequel episode on Millennium, but we'll get into that one a little later.
Right, okay. Well, I would echo those thoughts. I think that it is one of the best episodes of TV ever as well. I mean, it's closely followed for me, really, at this moment in time with Twin Peaks, part 8 of season 3. And the two Millennium episodes, Midnight of the Century and Curse of Frank Black, those are kind of my favourite TV shows ever, TV episodes ever, sorry. And I just like those offbeat, meta episodes. And I think that Jose Chung takes the biscuit purely because it was at the time when I was growing up as well.
Okay, well, our respective answers to the next question are probably pretty obvious, but what do you rate this episode on a scale of 1 to 10?
If I have to be absolutely critical on it, I would probably say a 9.975, potentially. How does that sound? Or do I have to go? Do I have to round up?
I don't think you have to be critical. I can think, it's based on your personal opinion and for you. So I don't think you have to, take away, but now I'm interested to know where the 0.25 went.
We might find that out as we go along.
Well, it's a 10 for me, and over at IMDb, it's been ranked by the denizens of IMDb at 9.1, which places it third for season 3 behind Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose at 9.3 and Paperclip at 9.2. It's a pretty admirable score, particularly because I know there are X-Files fans out there who just don't like it at all. And I'm, my mind is always trying to figure out why that is. Why not, some don't like the episodes that have comedy in them or are mainly comedy at all. So I understand that. But the rest of the people, I sometimes wonder if it's because they can't follow the plot and they sort of consider it a mishmash that doesn't have a clear through line, or maybe they think it's a fantasy episode like Triangle or Field Trip. But I think this one is a real case, and it has pieces of the puzzle, and you can put them together, and it really does have more resolution than many of their other cases.
Yeah, I mean, I think another potential issue with it for a lot of fans is that it doesn't actually have that much Mulder and Scully in it. Because it is factoring on point of views, so there is a fair chunk of them in, and it's, unlike some episodes where there's hardly any of both of them in, but it does have that fair chunk of bits where they're not together or they're not really, as they would normally be, because we're seeing it through the lens of different people's perspectives, and I think that may throw people off as well.
Oh yes, that's a great point. Okay, let's take a look at this actual case. What I love so much about it is that it's all there. All the pieces are there in the stories of the witnesses and even in our heroes, Scully and Mulder.
Yeah.
So it's about discerning these facts and sort of breaking through the haze of the rinsing out of the characters that they got with the usual abduction rigmarole and or their trauma and or their penchant for fantasy prone conjecture. So you know, we're sort of playing detective during this episode.
We have to pay close attention to what is being done and what is being said on screen to be able to follow it. It is followable, but you just need to pay that close attention to it.
All right, so we'll recap a little bit. You have the two kids, Harold and Chrissy. They're on a date. They get stopped by pilots dressed as aliens flying a UFO or a ship with alien technology. And then a third creature, who named Lord Kinboat by Rocky, the man who's inspecting power lines in the area, so he's a witness to this. And this Lord Kinboat appears and starts menacing the pilots. So, Kurt, what's your opinion of what's going on here in all of that?
Well, it's very typical abduction case sort of starting point. You've got two teenagers going along the road where you lose power. You've got an abduction that's taking place. And I think the Lord Kinboat side of things is that you're seeing that from the pilot's point of view. So which is the aliens dressed up. So you've got the aliens dressed up and you're seeing what they see, this third alien. So this third alien could be anything, because we just don't know what's happened to the pilot who's actually seeing that from their point of view.
I think one of the coolest things about watching this episode again and always watching it is it's packed so densely by Darren Morgan that you can still see new things in it. And one of the things I noticed while rewatching for this podcast is during Chrissy's second hypnosis sessions, one of the members of the Air Force asked whether the third alien had a Russian accent. And yeah. How prescient does that seem right now in the real world?
It absolutely does, yeah. I mean, I think it also links in with season three's as a whole, doesn't it? Because you've got the whole Cold War aspect running in the background of season three. So I think that using that that sort of fear, and especially as you say now, and coming from the UK as well with the poisoning aspects that we've had recently, you know, it is really sort of a point that's definitely worth making during this sort of time.
And it still feels relevant. You know, that's the great thing about it. So we have all these people giving tidbits about the case, and they kind of fold into each other. But the one that I think gives the best take on what happened is when Lieutenant Schaefer is chatting with Mulder at the diner. And he explains that when the UFO technology is being tested and these witnesses are abducted, nothing physical is done with them and they just get their minds messed with. So he's seen people emerge from those sessions just positive they were probed by aliens. And he's sure he and his co-pilot and the kids were abducted, but he's not really sure any of them exist.
Yeah, it's a wonderful scene, that in the Ovaltine cafe. And I think the another key point that he says in that diner is that you see a UFO, you hesitate for a second. And I think that's a really good point from a military point of view, that, you know, if you are trained to do something and you see something out of the ordinary, you are going to hesitate. So I think that's a really good plot point that they put in there.
It's a fabulous scene. I mean, it's my favorite. I'm always psyched for when it gets to that point. But then if you go back to Chrissy's second hypnosis session, it's kind of backing up what he's said. It's like the Air Force personnel are bleeding into her memories. So she got rinsed out, but now what really happened is sort of bleeding through. Is that the way you see that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, without a doubt. I think that's a really good point. And it does feel that is starting to bleed through, absolutely.
I think what's really amazing about the hypnosis just in general, first of all, Chrissy's fears feel very real to me. It doesn't feel like any kind of parody of what we know abduction to be from movies and television. When we first see her in her home the next day and she thinks her stuffed animal is an alien and she thinks the shadow of Harold is an alien, she's traumatized. And I feel that with her. And then when she's going through this hypnosis and the images are altering, and great direction by Rob Bowman, by the way. And the people are lined up in the same places, whether they are Scully and Mulder and her parents and the doctor, or the aliens, or the Air Force personnel. They're all in the, you know, the similar configurations, and I just love the way that is done.
Yeah, and you mentioned just before about the when she returns home and the alien at the end of the bed, and you know it is a comedy episode, but it's in some ways darkly comic. But on that particular scene, you've got the alien at the end of the bed, which is something that has been reported over the years in UFO and alien lore. So you've got something that's quite real and to a lot of people. And, you know, there might be explanations for that. And, you know, sleep paralysis being one of them. That's something that's certainly something that's been brought up with, you know, having creatures at the end of the bed or not being able to move and things like that. So it's using real life experiences that people have had. And it was actually at the time, and still now, you know, you get that scare from that part of the show, and that's why it isn't a total parody. There is an underlying story in there, and it is highlighting what alien abduction law has, and it has very good strong links as well with the early X-Files before the Black Oil was involved. You've got early aspects of likes of the Pilots and Deep Throats and Conduit, so it's kind of linking back to that kind of thing, going back to the original concept and the original experiences that people have had when they do think they've been abducted by whoever that may be.
I think one of the keys to our puzzle is also the repeated dialogue, and we have people saying, how the hell should I know, or this is not happening, and a lot of variations on I'm a dead man or you're a dead man. And what do you think there's anything to be gleaned from the fact that there are these callbacks? I kind of think it's if even Mulder and Scully are rinsed out in this episode, to me, that's how I see it. And the people rinsing out are using similar words and similar phrases. And I think that's why there are so many callbacks and so much repeated dialogue. Is that something you see in it?
It's not something that I've really thought about. I love repetitive humor. I must admit, I know it's sometimes a bit crass humor, but having that repetitive humor actually is quite a funny thing. But then from a storytelling perspective, because the broken parts of the episode itself, it's helping to bring all those parts together. And yeah, thinking about it would be something that would happen if you've undergone hypnosis and there was key words or key things that you would bring back into those sort of point of view storytelling parts. And I think, yeah, it's an interesting concept that I've not really thought about before.
That's why it's so much fun to still to this day watch the episode again, because you see and you read more into it. And so we have two wildly different variations on the Men in Black here. We have, you know, talkative Jesse Ventura and silent Alex Trebek, and then we have the one disguised as a woman who's not pulling it off because her hair is too red, and the tall, lanky one who's blank and expressionless until he yelps. It's kind of interesting that there are kind of two sets of Men in Black in this one.
Yes, yeah. And Men in Black lore is something that I think that Darren wanted to bring out as well. It is part of the lore, and Men in Blacks have been like sort of told throughout the year, so bringing that into the forefront of what we do. There's also in UFO lore as well that you have Men in Black who are basically alien creatures that were like 7-8 feet tall and things, and then you've got, as you say, like the Mulder and Scully are basically taking the part of kind of the military complex as such in some ways, because the military have obviously are doing these abductions. And, you know, the Men in Black may well be involved in that as well. So you've got those little convoluted ideas of these Men in Black being kind of a story to tell. But the whole reason being that they look like Jesse Ventura or Alex Trebek is that they, you know, you would seem mad when actually go back and saying, well, I saw a Men in Black and it looks like Jesse Ventura, the wrestler. It just wouldn't track, and people would automatically go, no, I don't believe you. So having that as a story element as well, and a belief element, and something that, you know, something that is so far removed from normality, really adds to that confusion of the person who's been abducted.
I love how Mulder is on to that aspect of it. You know, he's on to the men in black behaving that way because people they encounter will say that, you know, they'll come off sounding like lunatics. And, yeah. And you know, Darren Morgan has gotten some guff for the way he's treated Mulder in his scripts, but he's got insight into him too. And I think that gets overlooked when you talk about things like his pose. You know, he has an affinity for Mulder and he has insight into him as well.
Yeah, yeah, he does. And what I like about the Yelp as well, it's a callback. I think it's a callback to War of the Cofferages when Scully's talking to him about the girly screen.
Ah, yes.
And he sees those creatures and stuff like that. So I actually link those two together, which I think is just hilarious. I mean, that Yelp is one of the funniest moments I've ever seen. It's absolutely fantastic.
By the way, do you do a Yelp?
No, my voice is way too low for that. I wouldn't even attempt it.
Okay, fair enough.
But by all means, if you want to go, Paige, then you know,
I was off yelping in the commentary track with Sarah.
That wasn't too bad. Really close. That was not too bad.
I'm kind of happy because I thought if I tried to do it right now, it wasn't going to come off. Pulled it off. Yes. Okay. So let's take more of a look at the episode. Just from the very opening, when you see the underside of that electrical truck carriage and your mind thinks it's a UFO because it's what you've been trained in movies and television to see. And then it comes across and you see what it really is. The brilliance is started 10 seconds into the show.
Yeah, it's a brilliant piece of subversion on that. And I think Darren Morgan does a really good job in most of his episodes about subverting what you would normally expect. So you've got that scene in Clyde Bruckman when we're expecting Mulder to come through the door when the detectives are talking about what we think is him, but it ends up being Yappy. He does that quite a lot in a lot of his episodes, and it's really good subverting it as well. Because you're leaping in, you know, you've got that Star Wars kind of joining in, then it goes back to what you would expect. And then it subverts it again with Kimbo. I just think it's absolutely fantastic.
And we'd be remiss not to mention the inspired casting of Charles Nelson Reilly. And that was a happy accident because originally Darren Morgan wanted Truman Capote, who sort of inspired the story while he was casting Clyde Bruckman. And he was unavailable, so Morgan's next choice was Rip Taylor, and he couldn't do it. And really, thank goodness for that, because Charles Nelson Reilly came in and knocked everyone's socks off.
Yeah, he did. And speaking of Truman Capote, I mean, obviously, Charles Nelson has played his own style and his own way of doing that. But he really pulls off that eccentric author type, which was Truman Capote to a T, really. I mean, obviously, he's dialed it back in some ways. Which obviously Truman Capote is such a wild character, but what is interesting with Capote's influence on this episode is that his book in Cold Blood, it was a story about the two guys who go across Kansas to murder a house full of people who were basically going in to take a safe and end up leaving with $50, and he got a lot of stick for writing a novel based on that. And it's amazing how we've come to this point in Jose Chung, where he starts talking about the non-fiction science fiction and having that idea of getting up to the bestsellers list and all that type of thing. I think that's a really nice little subtle sort of thing that they've put in there. And then you've also got the you've got that, it's sort of that moving on again. You know, you look at modern TV, you look at things like Mindhunter or even David Duchovny's Aquarius, where you've got real life events, but the story's written around it. So I think that over time has developed. And, you know, and I think that Darren Morgan was wise enough and quick enough to pick that out of the Capote story.
Definitely. Okay, so he's obviously going to be our favorite guest character. Who is your other favorite guest character in this episode?
Oh,
Because there are so many, you know, there are so many fun characters in here, and they're full of life, and they bring something different to the table, and you just kind of love all of them. But is there one you kind of like cotton to?
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe the myth side of me maybe ends up going towards Schaefer. I think the scene, again, as we mentioned before about the Ovaltine scene, I think that's brilliantly played by both Duchovny and him. I would then probably say Jesse Ventura, purely because at the time I was a big wrestling fan. So and he just plays himself, which I think, you know, is, I don't think he could play anything else differently either. But Jesse Ventura with the backbreaker, which was supposed to be a power driver, supposedly. So it was too dangerous, even though I did that to my brother when I was about 14.
Oh, my God. My brother did pile drivers to my sister. So there were a lot of pile drivers going on in the world.
No, there was, but not in the X-Files, But, so I'd say probably from a storytelling, from an X-Files point of view, I think that it's definitely Schaefer, but my heart does tend to go towards the Jesse Ventura.
Now, it is very much like him, but then Darren Morgan puts these words and these phrases into his mouth that he must have, that must have been so hard for him to get out. Can you imagine doing scenes with that kind of verbiage in him?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, it's bad enough when you kind of know what they're talking about, and you know, you may have looked into it. We used to have a magazine called The X Factor where it would say all about UFO lore and the Ebola virus and all that type of thing. To be involved in it at that time, you can half understand it, but someone coming in from a wrestling background and then straight into these literally monologues of text, which, you know, doesn't make sense. I just can't imagine what he would have been thinking.
Well, my favorite is Detective Manners, played by Larry Musser, who's a veteran of four other X-Files episodes. He was the sheriff in D-Ha and D-Roulettes. He's the left-wing group leader in Unrequited and the police captain in Chinga. And, of course, the detective is based on the late, great X-Files directing and producing icon Kim Manners and his colorful phraseology.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? I think that Darren Morgan has said on the commentary on the season 3 DVD that obviously it was Kim Manners' colourful language, but the censors really helped with that bleeping, all the bleeps and blanksy blanks and things that, you know, that the censors pretty much made them do because of what happened. And having that has made it even funnier, and the censors have done them a favour. And I think it is a fantastic, and he delivers it so dry, that actor as well. It's just absolutely fantastic.
It's so wonderful, and down to even the last one when they're at the scene where the two pilots have been found deceased, and he just says bleep. I mean, it's a perfect bleep. It's a perfect one word, perfect. So let's talk a little bit about some of the names and the tie-ins that Darren Morgan sort of wrote in by using the names of real people who have sort of a tangential relationship to the story he's telling. Well, I know you have some. Do you want to go? You do yours first, and then I'll do mine.
Okay, no problem. So I think I'll start with Rocky. Rocky Crickinson is based on a musician called Rocky Erickson. He was in a psychedelic rock band called the 13th Floor Elevators. And it's a sad story now, thinking back at it. But at the time, you know, our sensitivities probably weren't as sensitive as what they are or would be now. And Rocky Erickson, basically, he was in a fairly popular, well-known psychedelic rock band. And he developed or was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And they actually believed that a Martian was encompassing his body. So having the Rocky scene with Lord Kinbo is kind of a not an homage to it, but a kind of relation to that, and a little nod to that this guy was basically saying that a Martian had taken over him and was entering him, and he actually asked for a legal contract to be drawn up, pledging his official status as being an alien, So, but it, little known to him, he wasn't aware that obviously that statement was a false legal document. But it got to that point. So the Rocky Erickson theme has moved into Rocky Crickinson. And what I like about Rocky Crickinson overall is that he is a person who you think at the beginning, you know, is quite a normal person, but then you delve deeper into his psychosis, and you do see the events that has really touched him and affected him. And then obviously he's talking about the Laverman towards the end of the episode. So Rocky Erickson's my first.
Okay. Robert Schaefer, he's a renowned paranormal investigator who Lieutenant Jack Schaefer is named for. And he is the one who originally concluded that Jimmy Carter was misidentifying Venus. And then he also co-founded, this is a long title, the UFO Subcommittee of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry with Philip Klass. And our whole story takes place in Klass County. So that's another one. And then Robert Valley, the other pilot, is named Major Valley. That's another, that's a nod to another UFO author, another UFO author. And even the MP who arrests Schaefer, I'm losing it now, I think I need my mind rinsed, is named Sergeant Hynek. And that's a nod to Air Force researcher J. Allen Hynek, who coined the phrases close encounters of the first kind and the second and the third, which is referenced again in our story when Jack Schaefer is building a little devil's tower out of mashed potatoes, just like Richard Dreyfuss did in Close Encounters.
He did. There's also Lord Kinbo is a literary reference to Pale Fire, the book Pale Fire. I don't know if you've read that, but I've had an attempt at it a couple of times, but it just doesn't quite work for me. But basically, Lord Kinbo is based on a fictional character called Charles Kinbo. Charles Kinbo is a character who's writing notes on a hundred word line poem by a guy called Shades, both of which are fictional people. So he's writing in his, as if he's writing the book in the first person. And he's writing notes within the lines of the story, but you can read the story by following his notes. So it's very non-linear. So it's an interesting thing that Darren Morgan's has put that Kinbo in as a reference to that, with the non-linear way of storytelling. And within the story itself, that Kinbo is actually talking about his own story. So he's meant to be referencing and talking about what this guy Shades had said in the poem, but he ends up talking about his own narratives within that, and they're nested within. And if you read it properly, you can read it logistically, you can read it as if what it's just one narrative in a linear fashion, or you can read it in a non-linear way, and each way will give you a different aspect of it. It is a difficult read. I've tried it a couple of times when I was younger, but I've not got round to going back to it and giving it another go. But that's certainly something to check out.
That's awesome. I don't know if I'd be able to get through that. I find that stuff, you know, so clunky in my brain to not be able to do that. Were there any more?
Probably.
Well, yeah, we could probably go on at length about it. And we could probably go on at length about Jose Chung's From Outer Space as well. You know, the cook who remembers seeing Mulder eating all the slices of sweet potato pie. Yes. Obviously, the cook was rinsed out, okay? Right. But that Air Force psychiatrist was kind of going rogue that day, if that's the kind of imprint he put in the guy's head. I always laugh at that part of it, because I just think Air Force psychiatrist has gone rogue.
It's probably nothing, but in my head, I always, every time I see that guy, I automatically think of Deep Space Nine and Morn. So if anyone's got there's a Deep Space Nine reference for you. If you check out Morn, he's always standing at the bar, pretty much with that facial expression, never says a word. So it always like jumps back to that. And which is something also during that scene when you've got the Mulder eating the pie, you've got a jump cut as well, which is when he talks about, have you experienced missing time? And there's a cut,
right?
Which I always quite like. I think that's a little piece of genius there. And the and Darren Morgan has said he's not aware of this, but the obviously the link to Agent Cooper in Twin Peaks as well. With Twin Peaks, Agent Cooper loves his cherry pie. But he said that wasn't part of it. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see if that was really the point. But I'd still love to see an Agent Cooper, Agent Mulder get together. I know we had Denise, but it would certainly be an interesting one.
It definitely would. It definitely would.
The hypnosis scenes is an interesting, a definite homage. I can't remember who mentions it. I think it might be Scully. I'm not 100% sure. But they say about the Doctor. They say about the Caligarian. Candidate.
Right.
And that's a mixture of two things. So it's Dr. Caligarian was a 1920s silent horror movie, and a lot of people think that's the birth of the silent horror movie, or the birth of horror movies. And that was all about a hypnosis guy who was hypnotizing this person to do murders. So that's one side of it. And then you've got the Manchurian Candidate, which was a Frank Sinatra 1960s movie. And it, which is very, very reminiscent of the hypnosis scenes. Early on in that film, a group of soldiers get abducted and taken to be brainwashed. And the characters, one of the characters is sleeping and is having this recurring nightmare. And the recurring nightmare is he's sitting in this this like sort of garden house with all these well-spoken English women talking about gardening and things. I can't remember exactly what it was about exactly, but and as the dream goes on, it then changes to a military personnel talking about these soldiers have been brainwashed, and this brainwashed soldier is told to kill one of his other soldiers and does so. But during that scene, there's flips between the women in the garden and the military guy, and different parts and different elements of those two scenes sort of come collide together, and you're never quite sure where one ends and where the other one begins. So it's very, very similar to the hypnosis scenes in Jose Chung. So it's a guiding beeping light that's basically pointing you in that direction, that, you know, that was totally a ripoff of that film.
Right. Okay, now I want to forsake the usual X-Files quiz on this occasion so that we could get in a little bit of talk on Doomsday Defense, the sort of sequel episode.
Yeah, why did you rate the Somehow Satan Got Behind Me higher?
Oh, that so one's fun too.
I think that's, personally for me, I think that's a better episode. I watched Doomsday Defense recently. I've been rewatching season two of Millennium. I'm into season three now. And Doomsday Defense, it is a natural successor, and the some of the stories, and I think it, I don't think it's as funny as Jose Chung, but I think it's got more of the I like the parody of the religion that we will not name just in case we get sued.
Yeah, okay. I was gonna say it, so it's probably good that you stopped me from saying it.
Yes, it definitely stopped you.
So it was, this is Darren Morgan's first script for Millennium, and it's also the first time he directed.
Yes, it is, yeah. I completely forgot about that.
Okay, so in this very thinly veiled satire of called Self-Philosophy, Onan Gupta amasses this cult following, mostly in California, so I kind of suspect Rocky got involved with it at some point. But there's this idea of constantly reinforcing the concept, I've never been so happy in my life, and then you're introducing the dour Frank Black into this mix.
Instantly, when you said that, the dour Frank Black, I'm just instantly going back to the bit in the book. Towards the end of the episode when he comes in through that door, and so you know, so he's all grey haired, but his suit is all like sort of colourful, and how good Lance Henriksen is in that scene.
Oh, when he's playing Gupta's version of the roving freelance forensic profiler named Rocket McGrain.
That's it, Rocket McGrain. Yeah,
he totally, Lance Henriksen must have had a ball with that. You know, bringing him to life. He's like, boys, lighten up. This is a homicide, not a funeral. You know, it was so much fun. So Frank Black, whom Jose aptly calls Monsieur Noir, is brought into the case because there's something millennium mystic about it.
Yeah, and then the term millennium mystic was born.
Yes. And this self-philosophy psycho, who I love, played by Richard Steinmetz. He is amazing. That freak out he has at the newsstand when he's tearing apart magazines with Jose Chung's article in them about self-philosophy. He's just ripping them to shreds. Is hysterical.
Yeah.
And then he utters lines like, "All right, my gun jammed." You know, he's being positive in that self-philosophy positive way. So we have some correlations between the two shows. We knew from the previous episode that Dana is a Jose Chung fan. She brought up the Lonely Buddha, and yeah. Frank Black is a fan. A Lap Full of Severed Tongues was his favorite Jose Chung book. And
yeah, do you think that's a callback to was it The Judge? The Judge in season one.
Oh,
that's what I think that is. I think that's a callback to that.
I love that. Yes.
Mm.
And there's a priceless bit with the two movie posters using David Duchovny.
Duchovny's pictured,
Bobby Wingood. One is the high on drugs actor, Mr. Ne'er-do-well, and the other, after he becomes a devout follower of self-philosophy, is called Operation Box Office. So you become a success after you join self-philosophy.
What I like about that, I was actually, strangely enough, talking about this morning about having Meta involved in TV shows and, you know, like the slushu of Lost and Fringe and Star Trek of J.J. Abrams and Alias and things, is that I watched an episode of Millennium this morning, and there was an episode where Killswitch was on, and that really took me out of the narrative, because I see Millennium, and Millennium is part of the universe of the X-Files. It's the same universe and same story. But what they do really good here is that Bobby Wingood is just an actor. It's not molded on TV. It's not a thing. It's an actual actor. So the meta really works for me in that circumstance. But the picture of him when he's got his mouth open and he's just smiling with that gun is absolutely amazing. I that picture. I need to get that picture at some point.
I love it. So. Darren Morgan's point, besides don't be dark, because he always has at least one point, and what I love about his scripts is he'll let the most obnoxious, irritating guy in the story make his point. In this case, one of his points was people are reluctant to open up to dark, gloomy brooders, which is sort of looking at what people say about Frank Black and how serious he is all the time. And the guy who says that is the self-philosophy spokesman, the most irritating individual, but he gets to deliver the keynote address there.
He does. And I think that Darren Morgan does that quite well as a whole. I mean, that guy comes, I think it's the same guy, that guy comes back in, somehow Satan got behind me, as the censorship guy, which is a fantastic little set piece where the... he's saying that not everything's got to be censored and stuff. But what I like about the way that it's calling back to what Millennium is, and a lot of the Jose Chung's from Outer Space, is what the X-Files is. So I like the he's looking introspectively at what these two shows are. So there's so many layers with his story points. I think it's absolutely incredible that he's able to put that in. Meanwhile, being this fun and frolic and fantastically comedic episode.
Right. But as in the case in both these episodes, we have so much fun over the course of them, and then it ends with this serious line that just hits home. I mean, from Outer Space, it was, "For although we may not be alone in the universe, in our own separate ways on this planet, we are all alone." And then here, in Doomsday Defense, he's offering up his own prophecy for the dawn of the millennium. What shall that bring? 1,000 more years of the same old crap. It's so Darren Morgan.
Yeah, and somehow Satan got behind me. You have Frank Black. I'm not sure it's quite at the end, but Frank Black looking at the final story, the fourth story, and basically says to the demon, you know, you must be so lonely. So again,
right.
it's that reoccurring trope that he has throughout all of his shows. And you look at Clyde Bruckman as well, at the end of Clyde Bruckman, that's another one where he has these little moments at the end of each of the episodes, and obviously Lost Art of Fire to it, as we've mentioned before, which is one of my favourite moments in the show's run.
So it's just... It's just classic Darren Morgan. And so yeah. we want everybody who hasn't seen this episode to get a hold of it because we think you really enjoy it.
Absolutely. Anyone that can come on to Millennium. I know season one's difficult and I know season three's not the best in, TV show in the world, but anyone that needs to can get onto Millennium, even if this is a gateway to you, I would definitely recommend seeing Jose Chung's Doomsday Defense without a doubt.
It's time to dip into the old mailbag and see what the denizens of XCast on social media have to say about this episode. So Jeremy Daniels had an interesting take. He said, "It's interesting to think of this in relation to Forehead Sweat, as they both deconstruct the central thesis that the truth is out there. Forehead Sweat is almost an updated look at that concept and how Morgan pulls the truth apart as a concept."
I can see that, really, but it's like almost like a trilogy with Doomsday Defense, isn't it, as well? I mean, Forehead Sweat, it had that nostalgic feel anyway, so I think that was part of its brilliance, is that, you know, as well as it being its own episode, it's definitely of a Darren Morgan style, and it definitely had hallmarks of both Jose Chung and Doomsday Defense. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, I love how he deconstructs and reconstructs, and he really, he's always made me think of all of it in a different way. Like, once I originally saw From Outer Space, I looked at the X-Files a new way. And after Forehead Sweat aired, I looked at it in a new way. And that's the kind of thing that Darren Morgan gives you.
Yeah, it's introspective look of things is really good. And you know, where would we be without him? You know, I know as much as we've been sort of his champion for this, but he's just absolutely fantastic person and an absolutely fantastic writer.
Okay, Kathy Irwin Glinsky. "This episode is in a three-way tie for my all-time favorite. But the first few times I watched, I hated it. Just seemed silly and pointless, but then I got it. The subtle humor, the brilliant commentary on the show and genre, and the standout performances all add up to make it an episode I can rewatch and enjoy over and over."
That's an interesting take, that, really, isn't it?
I appreciate someone giving it another chance. There are people who don't like this and will never give it a chance. But to look at it again with fresh eyes and see what the intention was, you know, not to be silly and pointless. There's a point to every single word when Darren Morgan is writing a script.
Yeah, and I also think, I mean, for me personally, I mean, I love ambiguity of films and TV, and Jose Chung is certainly that. And I love things that are able or deep enough that you can, you know, re-look into. I mean, even for this podcast, you know, the whole thing about the Manchurian Candidate and all that type of thing is so deep that, you know, if you really want to go that far, you can do. If you want to watch it once and have a bit of fun, you can do. But, you know, there is those elements. And I went away from the first viewing thinking it was a fantastic, funny episode. It's only after several watches that you kind of catch on to things. And, you know, it's like listening to your favorite piece of music. You know, you can go back to it and you'll hear like a drum beat or a bass fill that you haven't heard before. And if you give it that chance, you know, I think it's definitely worth doing.
Right, absolutely. Sarah, Devi Comte, said, "I had to watch it three times to truly understand it and get to the core, and yet I'm still wondering stuff about that episode I like very much." And then she rewatched it right after that and said, "I must say it's a very brilliant episode, so quotable as well, and I wonder if The X-Files is a non-fiction science fiction."
Yeah, it's a nice little touch.
Absolutely. Okay. Cortland Waters Bartley said, "No deep thoughts from me, just genuine love for this episode and all its bleeping greatness."
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank Kurt for Jose Chunging with me. I just made him a verb.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Paige. I've really enjoyed it.
So let's let everyone know where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, you can currently find me at R Muldrake, which is quite apt. So it's R-M-U-L-D-R-A-K-E on Twitter. I'm currently doing the 5 Tweets of X, which is 5 questions every day over from Monday to Friday. And I'm running right through the whole season. One currently at the moment, but I'm going hopefully to go through right through to season 11, and that's five questions. That some of them are just stupid ones, some of them are really deep discussions. Other ones are just general. What would Scully say at the end of the episode, or something like that? So it's a bit of fun for someone to come in. Anyone that's involved in the X-Files to come in and join in with me. So that's at R. Muldrick.
It's great fun to read, and to, you know, you don't have to answer every single one. You can answer one, you answer whatever interests you, but it's a fun thing to do over on the Twitter. So myself, I'm writing a series rewatch blog with my sister called Sibling Cinema on Blogger. And we post on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Pinterest. So look for sibling_cinema or sibling-cinema, and you're bound to come across us. Thanks so much for tuning in. And remember, as always, trust no one.
The X-Cast is produced and presented by Tony Black, part of the Black Hole Media Podcast Network. Title music is courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I am Will A-Y-E.